So, first off, Danny, thanks for being here.
Oh, good to be here, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Great. And so we're talking about Carbon, your new graphic novel that's released regionally right now, and we'll get into how people can get it and when the national release is going to come along. Danny, I want to start off by having you explain the concept of the book. It's called Carbon, obvious reference to coal. But go ahead and take a few moments to explain to listeners what the concept in the storyline of the book is.
That's the problem. It's hard to do in a few moments because it's been rattling around my head in 30 years now since my first introduction to coal living in Williamson and my environmental views that changed over the years. But basically, as an entertainer, I was always looking for a property that could where I could put these pieces into it and still entertain people. And about 10 years ago, it finally hit me. Always go back to the beginnings. Go back to the beginnings. Well, coal is carbon. We are carbon. Coal was formed by plant and animal life, us, over millions of years. What if you reverse that process? So it's that what if, you know, and in the storyline here, there was a civilization before ours, a Garden of Eden, so to speak, where the civilization did not obey God's rules to live in balance, and they were sent underground until the time the earth replenished itself, given immortality. But they stopped caring, stopped praying, and became carbon. Thousands of years later, an evil coal baron finds a piece of it in that sacred pocket and discovers that that carbon will burn forever. So over a 30-year time period, sends expeditions in to get it, not telling them what it is, and they get wiped out by the Guardians each time. So anyway, that's about as briefly as I can explain the concept. But Dave, it was, you know, I'm a filmmaker, but this was my big Hollywood movie that I just never got to the circles where we could put this kind of budget together. And then when I fell into graphic narrative 5 years ago, it was like, well, holy cow, I can do this now because it costs the same amount. In comic books, it's $100 a page, you know, whether it's people sitting here talking or giant coal monsters. So, you know, this was the right time and place for me to do this story.
Sure. Well, it's a great book, and I really enjoyed reading it. Anyone that's from this area will definitely pick up on a lot of references to West Virginia. We'll get into that a little bit later as well. But it's my understanding that this project's been in your head for quite a while, and I know that you introduced it as a crowd-funded thing a few years back. Talk a little bit about the development of the project and how long it's been around and why it's coming out now.
Well, to tell you the truth, this is perfect timing, but it's not the timing I wanted. This book could have come out 2 years ago, and this world of publishing is nutty. I'm telling you, it's as nutty as filmmaking, the way things get delayed. But again, everything happens in its time. I began close to 5 years ago, and I'd been in a drought of creative drought in my life and everything. And my buddy Bill Bittner and I had done the Death Falcon Zero book, which was a failed film. And I started reading comics again. I thought, wow, comics have gotten a lot better in the 30 years I haven't been reading them. So I literally wrote it in 4 or 5 weeks, 5 summers ago. I mean, it just I'd been building up, and I plotted it out, much like I'm doing the second book, Salt, right now. And then it was, you know, I was new to this business, so I had to retool, and I had two buddies in West Virginia that were in the business, Bob Tennell up in Morgantown and Jason Pell right here in South Charleston, and they kind of helped me, you know, over the learning curve, and then it's finding artists. But my plan was Carbon was too big to come out with first because I needed to kind of build my name up in the comic business. So I played off of the filmmaker thing. Troma came and re-released my old stuff, and they're going to again this summer with Space Preachers. I played off that card, and I decided to first do Chillers as a graphic novel because it had, you know, some name power, and luckily it did. So we expanded Chillers with all new stories, and when I did a search for artists, the way you do it, it's all online now. I got responses. Dozens and dozens and dozens of responses, and I just really loved this studio in Brazil, Roscuno, that responded. I like their artists, and I like their colorists, and I like them, so I worked with them a little bit. We did two Chillers books in between while working on this, but it was all part of a plan. Okay, let's get my name up and out there with Chillers, which I think I've done. I mean, the books have done well, and put the best people, just like film, you know, I tell my students, just put the best people around you can get. And those were the best I could get.
The book hits very, very explicitly on issues related to coal and industry in West Virginia. You know, it's a very complex thing here. And also in January, we had the Elk River chemical spill, which, you know, everyone knows what happened to the water supply. And the EPA just this week releasing their clean power plan. Talk a little bit about, I guess, the struggles that you've observed and how you sort of came to terms with being conscious in that way and wanting to politicize it, but very delicately in a book such as this. You haven't really gone there with your work before. Why exactly this issue and why in this form?
Well, I haven't gone there before because I think it's presumptuous of entertainers and artists to take their politics, you know, too blatantly. I purposely waited for, as I said, a property like this where I could cut loose on it, and I really am. I'm fully out now, you know, with this. But I'm not anti-capitalism. I'm not anti-industrial world that we live in. My goodness, we wouldn't have this quality of life. But any normal thinking human being has to realize that the last two industries that you want to regulate themselves are coal and chemical. You know, I'm sorry. Greed is going to win out. We need safeguards there. Well, the book had been delayed. It was supposed to come out in January and delayed again. And the publisher kept seeing Charleston, West Virginia on World News, and he called me and said, since we've been delayed, I'm seeing this water thing. Would you like to add something to your afterword about that? And I said, heck yeah, I do. So I sat down and wrote that piece there at the end. So, you know, I mean, the timing is just my good luck. I mean, the timing could have come out with Sago, Upper Big Branch. You know, that's, you know, and I had the idea before those things happened. And that's the last thing in the world I want to exploit. What a horrible thing that we all went through. Not only as West Virginians, but I mean, people all over the world that sympathize with what we're going through. So there was, you know, I wanted to hit that issue of corporate greed at the sacrifice of human life, but also the environmental. I mean, it's just cutting the tops off of mountains and filling valleys and poisoning water supplies. It's just a bad idea.
Talk a little bit about the setting in West Virginia. It takes place down in Mingo County. There's references to Charleston, a few nods to West Virginia State University, mm-hmm. and, you know, Charleston being the capital. Talk a little bit about how the sense of place and the culture and economy, using the place where you live in the region as the framework and the obvious reasons how that informs the narrative of the story itself.
Well, I mean, it really is geography, a story here. And like I said, my first real job was in Williamson, West Virginia in 1980. And as a West Virginian, I thought I knew coal. I did not know coal. I mean, that was the greatest education I could have ever gotten at the time. And there's been a piece of Mingo County in nearly everything I've written since. It was just such a rich part of my life and a strange place of incredible goodness and incredible badness with it all. So it was very important to get the geography here. I mean, you need to go to the coal fields because it's built different and has a lot to do with the way things happen. That was one of the most difficult things to explain to my artists in Brazil, so I did a lot with Google Images. You've got to get the tightness, the geography of all this. So I set it in my world, you know, I started out in Williamson and went a couple other places and then ended up in Charleston, and a road connects it. I wasn't forcing it. Of course, I'm going to promote my university, West Virginia State University. I mean, I've been there 31 years and they've always supported me. But the rest, it was just a natural setting. And as I wrote in the afterword, if coal was at the center of a climate change conversation, West Virginia is at the center of coal. And Mingo County is the heart of the billion-dollar coal field. So actually the town of Eden in there is Williamson.
As you're developing this, realizing that for the first time in your career that you're really taking that dive into a political issue, was there any fear of backlash from friends, from family? And again, you know, these are complex issues here. It's not always cut and dry, you know. What was the thinking as you're developing this? Hey, is, you know, my friend over here or my colleague over here? Or, because, I mean, you work on the university setting. I mean, there's a plethora of belief systems that go around there. Was there any sort of, I guess, fear that delving into the subject, and especially related to science, that it might turn some people off or, you know, change opinions or have some effect on you personally and professionally.
Well, I'll tell you, David, what scared me the most was offending my fellow West Virginians. I can take the heat. People don't like my work. You know, I've been in showbiz. I can take that. They want to buy my stuff. I can take that. But what bothered me, what I worry about the most, is losing the friendship. Because West Virginia has been awesome to me. I mean, I've had a career here. I've had an international career, but it's always come from here. So, you know, I can take the commercial business heat. It's more the personal that I worried about. And that's why I so carefully wrote that afterward. This is why I'm doing this, guys. I'm not throwing us under the bus. But it's time for people in the middle to have a voice instead of the two extremes. And, you know, you mentioned West Virginia State University. You know, I have to say, I don't speak for them. But like any liberal arts university, they respect my intellectual freedom, you know, and they support me in that way. And even in my own family, there are people that disagree with certain parts of that. But what I'm basically saying in there is, you know, we always had this motto, West Virginians are independent and free. Well, we've stopped being that way. We're now being manipulated instead of by thugs, by PR agents from both sides. It used to be able, we could sit down and have a beer, maybe go out and have a little fight, shake hands, and we're still family. So I fear no industry. I fear no backlash in those ways. What I don't want to lose is the friendship of my fellow West Virginians. I respect their opinions. I hope they'll respect mine.
Another thing that needs pointed out is John Sayles writes the introduction. Mm-hmm. Of course, filmmaker that did Mate One. You know, he says in it that it's essentially an unfilmable movie, basically out of budget.
Right.
In your head, do you see it as a movie? And if so, what would it take? And do you hope to one day get there with this project?
Well, hopefully from your lips to God's ears. But I want to thank John Sayles for doing that. I hadn't seen him in 20 years, but he is so important to the film industry in West Virginia. So many of us got our start because of him coming here and making Mate One. He's just been a good supporter and ally of ours. And he says it, you know, unfundable because of the size of it. But actually, it's being shopped now. It's being shopped. I mean, Caliber Comics is the publisher, and they have a media arm. So it, along with Chillers, is starting to get through the door. And honest to God, I didn't write this as for a movie. I wrote it because I had to tell this story. It's one of those things I just had to tell, but I wrote it like a movie. I'm a screenwriter, you know, that's how I think. So every bit of it plays like a three act movie. So let's cross our fingers and hope. And like I say, I'm working on Salt, the second part of the trilogy now. So maybe.
And you have mentioned this as a trilogy. It's my understanding that you're going to be up, I believe, in Blackwater Falls this weekend.
Yeah, man.
For a climate change conference. Talk a little bit about, you know, doing a book like this and sort of entering the arena of the science world and how you can market a piece of literature from that angle, but also how the science becomes important to you because of what you're working on professionally.
Well, science is very important. I'm a research nerd. You know, people can say, well, you're just a comic book writer. Well, I'm a pretty well-read comic book writer, and I've thought about this a long time. And I love research, you know, and, you know, I have file folders full of Ken Ward columns from the Gazette and National Geographic and articles. And how this was going to cross over, it's an experiment now. Can you cross the comic book world over to the main literary world and the science environmental world? That's what we're testing right now. But this was just awesome timing. That's with West Virginia Highlands organization. We've got some really good environmental organizations in the state. And it just so happens they had climate change in West Virginia. So it's like, you know, and the biggest brains around for that. So, you know, I talked to our PR guys that can't get me this gig. I need to be around these guys. So, yeah, I use science. You know, I don't think entertainers ought to be allowed to run their mouths unless they can back it up with, now I exaggerate the data, of course, and, you know, turn it up five times. But the next book, Salt, is going to be more water-driven. The first book was more coal-driven, but climate change is going to accelerate, and I'm going to listen to those guys and see what they say, and then I'm going to multiply it by 100.
And in finishing up with you, what's the hope? I mean, Chillers was an international cult success, the comic book lines, you've done other work. Now with this coming out, is the expectation for this to exceed something than before, or do you go into it thinking, well, I've set the bar here, and anything on top of that is just, you know, icing on the cake? Or is there, when you walked away from developing this and putting the final touches on it, did you walk away saying, this is the best work I've ever done, here's where the bar should sit?
Well, I can tell you, 5 years ago when I made the decision to reinvent myself, I sat down with my daughters, who were adult at that time, and I said, this is what I want to do. I want to take all my savings. I want to put it into this because I have to tell the story. And if I just get the book out, it may not make money. I can be okay with that. Can you be okay with that? And they said, go for it. So everything is icing on the cake, to answer your question. The book is out. The book will be out nationally. But I'm greedy like anyone else. I want a lot more icing. I wanted to pick up enough that I can complete the series. And you know, Dave, I've had this criticism all through my career. And I did mind it when I was younger. But the local media would say, no one will get this out of West Virginia. Well, they've been wrong every time. People do get it. And they're already picking up on this around the country and hopefully with an international audience. And it comes back to my West Virginia saying, can we just sit down and talk about this ourselves now? I have another point of view. You know, and there are a lot of people that think like me. We've had to stay in the closet. We have to keep our mouths shut. It makes me think about my poor Republican friends during, the Clinton years or whatever. But, you know, they were probably afraid to say anything. And now I almost feel like I'm in that minority. If I say something bad about coal, I'm, you know, a boogeyman, or I'm coming to take your guns or something. But it's all icing. It's good icing right now.
Sure. One last thing. Explain how the book is available. Like you said, it's a regional release at this point. I'm guessing that means West Virginia and the Appalachian areas can get a hold of it through you, or how? And when is the national release, and what can, where can people go to get it?
The publisher did a really nice thing for me. He let me get a head start, started a couple weeks ago. It's only available where I'm at, or the stores where I've been. They have a supply. In Charleston, it's at Taylor Books and Lost Legion, my private comic shop. I'll have it, at the climate change thing at Blackwater Falls this weekend. Next weekend, the West Virginia Writers Group, which is an awesome event in Ripley. And then festival, literary panel, June 22 at Bluegrass Kitchen. And small gigs like that. So if there are bookstores out there that are interested, we have a head start until August. August, it's released through Diamond, and then it'll go to Amazon, all those things afterwards. But I want to be in as many places in West Virginia as I can in the meantime.
Great, Danny. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.